Hello to everyone, and welcome to the second to last teleclass of 2012. My name is Paul Weber, and today it is my pleasure to introduce Professor Marcus Dettenkofer and his lecture, Environmental Cleaning, Disinfection, and Microbial Resistance. Without fear of contradiction, I can say that Professor Dettenkofer is one of the most important resources in the world for environmental surface decontamination in healthcare settings. From the University of Freiburg in Germany, he is frequently on the agenda to speak at international conferences, and his name appears on almost every important discussion paper or consensus group and international best practice guideline document that deals with healthcare surface decontamination. It's a real honor to have Professor Dettenkofer give this presentation today. And before I let him get to it, let me also acknowledge the sponsor of this teleclass, which is Diversey. The good people at Diversey have been very good to teleclass education, and I thank them for their support of this lecture as well. And it's important to note that Diversey is generously sponsoring the broadcast of this lecture and not our speaker. So from the University of Freiburg, I am pleased to present my good friend, Professor Marcus Dettenkofer. Marcus, over to you.
Yes, thank you. And I would like to start with my lecture, and a lot of things have been mentioned. I hopefully can do this like the things which have been mentioned, internationally renowned expert and so on and so on. We are doing our best to get things really on the ground, to get the key points on environmental cleaning and disinfection. And we will see there are some really tricky issues which should be thought about if you are doing this in regular clinical practice. So I will start with the second lecture, second slide. This is just briefing about cleaning. So if you go to cleaning or think about cleaning in healthcare facilities, what must be cleaned? Sure, whatever it is or whatever is dirty or dusty. And Franz Daschner, one of my teachers here in Freiburg University Hospital, just briefly told us a hospital must be an absolutely clean place. And I think this statement is definitely true, and most or even all of us, I think, will agree. Coming to slide three, disinfection, in addition, makes it more reliable with respect to killing off bacterial or microorganisms. Elimination of pathogenic microorganisms is meant with disinfection, excluding microbial spores. So the reduction level is equal to or more than 5 logs for CFUs, but in practice and for surfaces, we just reach about 3 log CFU reduction. We know high-level disinfection as the killing of all microbial pathogens except large numbers of bacterial spores, and low-level disinfection, killing of most vegetative bacteria and lipid enveloped viruses. And if we go for surfaces, we surely lead, in most instances, low-level disinfection levels. Coming to slide 4. So what are the most or commonly used disinfectants for surfaces? Alcohols may be used, so ethanol and propanol. They are really fast acting antimicrobial substances in concentration from 60 to 90%. They have excellent environmental properties. There are no residues at all left on the surfaces, but for sure they can only be used on very small surfaces because of their flammability. So alcohols are properly used for some but small surfaces in hospitals. Parasitic acid, hydrogen peroxide, they are oxidizing high-level disinfectants with very good properties, also good environmental properties. However, there are some problems associated to corrosion with parasitic acid and hydrogen peroxide. Quaternary ammonium compounds, so quats, like benzalkonium chloride, are low-level disinfectants. They are allergens, widely used also, which is a concern in households, and they are for sure environmental concerns because they have a low degradability. Chlorine and chlorine-releasing compounds like sodium hypochlorite, the most known and substance and substance used in hospitals all over the world. They are high-level disinfectants in a higher concentration, and there are some environmental concerns associated to the use of chlorine. Glucoprotamine has a very broad spectrum. It's, it has a good material compatibility. It's non-irritating, and it's used in some, for instance, especially Western European countries, even or also in Germany. Coming to slide 5. How long do nosocomial pathogens persist on inanimate surfaces? There has been a systematic review by German colleagues published in 2006, and the conclusion was that the most common nosocomial pathogens may well survive or persist on surfaces for even months. And they can thereby be a continuous source of transmission if no regular preventive surface disinfection is performed. However, I put a question mark here because we really have to discuss whether we need disinfection as the proper mode of action or if cleaning for itself may be sufficient to remove debris and residues and even microorganisms with a mechanical action of cleaning without any special disinfection action. Slide 6. So if we look around the patient's environment today in our complex healthcare situations, and here a picture from an intensive care unit at our hospital, we see really a very diverse situation with the surfaces around the patient. And we see a lot of equipment, and we know from our practice that it's really hard to get rid of contamination around the patient himself. And on the other picture, the workplace of an anesthesiologist is seen. And we, also here we see some complex surfaces and a tiny space to do proper hygienic actions for these stuff. Slide 7. So pathogens in the hospital environment differ from the microbiology point of view. Some pathogens, especially water-loving bacteria like Pseudomonas species, they are mostly in damp places like sinks, showers, baths. Clostridium difficile and Enterococci, including vancomycin-resistant Enterococci, they prefer especially toilet areas and commodes, so they are associated to the gut. And Staphylococci, including MRSA and Acinetobacter, they like to settle on surfaces such like shelves or equipment. Klebsiella species and Serratia species are associated to buckets, bowls, mops, liquids, and for sure norovirus are widely spread, especially during outbreaks. So we know that pathogens, microbes, microorganisms around the patient are spread very easily, and we have noticed that they may survive on the surfaces for quite a long period. Slide 8. So what is the role of hospital surfaces in the transmission of emerging healthcare-associated pathogens? And this was reviewed by Weber and colleagues, published in 2010, with respect to norovirus, Clostridium difficile, and Acinetobacter species. And the colleagues summed up that there is evidence that suggests that environmental contamination plays a role in the nosocomial transmission of these three agents, the norovirus, Clostridium difficile, and Acinetobacter species. Infections have been associated with frequent surface contamination, hospital rooms, and healthcare workers' hands. And here, the healthcare workers' hands come into play because we have surface contamination, but we need the route for these microbes, these agents, these bugs to get to the patient. And the most frequent route is by the healthcare workers' hands. So in some cases, the extent of the patient-to-patient transmission has been found to be directly proportional to the level of environmental contamination, which more or less makes sense. If you have a high level of environmental contamination, the risk of transmission may be or is in most instances higher, and if there is a lower level of contamination, the risk of transmission may be lower. slide 9. Multi-resistant pathogens and gram-negative versus gram-positive bacteria in the hospital environment. This was studied by Sebastian Lemmon and colleagues from Aachen University Hospital in Germany. They surveyed 190 patients in 20 different locations in their hospital, patients harboring multi-resistant gram-positive or gram-negative bacteria. The detection rate for MRSA or VRE was about 25% in the multi-resistant gram-negative bacteria, gram-positive group for MRSA-VRE, and in the multi-resistant gram-negative bacteria group, only 5.9%. So the patient's environment was much less contaminated with gram-negative bacteria, and this was statistically significant. Gram-positive bacteria were isolated more frequently, also from the hands of the patients and the personnel. Environmental contamination did not differ in this investigation between ICUs and the general wards. And this was interesting because, as the colleague stated, noteworthy because their ICUs are routinely disinfected twice a day, whereas the general wards are cleaned just once a day with a detergent only, without a disinfectant. So we may question from this investigation if it's really necessary to have disinfectant agents or if cleaning for its own may be sufficient in special circumstances like in general wards or even in some ICUs where we do not really need the additional mode of action, for instance, for floors. Coming to the gram-positives, and we know this very well from VRE, this is slide 11. Investigators from Chicago have published this picture showing the positive sites for vancomycin-resistant enterococci around a patient. And we really see lots of surfaces here with this X in green, and mostly any surface which has contact to healthcare workers' hands, where healthcare workers are touching surfaces, has been contaminated with the vancomycin-resistant enterococci coming from this patient. We have had experiences with vancomycin-resistant enterococci managing an outbreak at our university hospital in 2004-2005. This was published at the ECCMID conference in 2007, and we had from 236 environmental specimens, 16, which makes 7%, positive for vancomycin-resistant enterococci. This was ultrasound equipment, infusion equipment, ventilators, tracheal suction equipment, cardiac monitor, bed rails, curtains, and bedside tables. So surfaces frequently touched by healthcare workers' hands. And also hands of the 68 healthcare workers were studied, and 5 of them, 7.4%, were positive. So vancomycin-resistant enterococci are really very problematic because this organism tends to stick on surfaces for a long period and is easily transferable. Coming to slide 13. Contamination after contact with VRE colonized patients was investigated by Hayden and colleagues and published in 2008. They did an observational study in routine clinical care. The setting was the medical ICU, 700-bed tertiary care teaching hospital in Chicago, and the proportions of the body sites and the environmental sites positive for VRE were highly correlated and statistically significant as shown here at the slide. Healthcare workers were nearly as likely to have contaminated their gloved or ungloved hands after touching an environmental surface in the room of a VRE-positive patient as after touching both the patient and the patient's environment. So it is really, in some instances, sufficient just to touch the surface to get the VRE on your hands. The rates of contamination was 52% after touching a surface only and 70% after touching both the patient and the patient's environment. Slide 14. The same group has published in 2006 in Clinical and Infectious Diseases a study dealing with the reduction in acquisition of VRE after enforcement of routine environmental cleaning measures. So they studied the effects of improved environmental cleaning with and without promotion of hand hygiene on the spread of VRE in their medical ICU. Baseline period was defined, then a period with improved environmental cleaning, period 2, washout period, period 3, and in addition, a multimodal hand hygiene intervention period, period 4. Coming to slide 15. The VRE acquisition rates were 33.5 cases per 1,000 patient days at risk in period 1, so the baseline period, 16.8, 12.1, and 10.4 cases per 1,000 patient days in periods 2, 3, and 4, respectively. So we see this on the graph, and it shows the quite considerable reduction in the VRE acquisition rates according to the periods studied. So the hazard ratio for acquiring VRE during periods 2 to 4 as compared to period 1 was 0.36, and this was statistically significant. Confidence interval 95% was 0.19 to 0.68. And the only determinant explaining the difference in VRE acquisition was admission to the intensive care unit during the baseline period, period 1. So they draw the conclusion that decreasing environmental contamination may really help to control the spread of some antibiotic-resistant bacteria in hospitals, especially as studied here, vancomycin-resistant enterococci. Slide 17. Data and colleagues published last year in Archives of Internal Medicine a study dealing with environmental cleaning intervention and risk of acquiring MDROs, multi-drug-resistant organisms, from prior room occupants, which is quite an interesting question, because it has been shown that if you are a patient in a room where the patient before you has been positive for MDROs, especially MRSA and VRE, you have a higher risk of acquiring this organism from the prior patient. They did an intervention with feedback. Black light marker was used to show whether the cleaning staff really did their job. Cleaning cloth were saturated with disinfectant, so just with the right concentration and the proper agent, and they increased the education on the cleaning stuff. So the results were quite interesting. The acquisition of MRSA and VRE was lowered from 3% to 1.5% for MRSA and from 3% to 2.2% for VRE. So MRSA, 3 to 1.5, VRE, 3 to 2.2. This was statistically significant for both. Patients in rooms previously occupied by VRE carriers, the increased risk of acquisition during baseline, which was 4.5% versus 2.8%, and intervention periods, 3.5 versus 2.0, was shown here. Coming to slide 18. The conclusions drawn from this study was that enhanced ICU cleaning intervention methods may reduce MRSA and VRE transmission. It may also eliminate the risk of MRSA acquisition due to an MRSA positive prior room occupant, but it may not eliminate the risk of VRE transmission. Interestingly. Slide 19. Clostridium difficile may contaminate, or may skin contamination due to Clostridium difficile may occur in patients with CD80. Prospective study of 27 patients with Clostridium difficile associated disease was published by Bowalski in Clinical Infectious Diseases in 2008. And Clostridium difficile really frequently contaminated multiple skin sites: the groin, chest, abdomen, forearms, and hands. And it was easily acquired on investigators' hands in this study, and also very important, skin contamination often persisted on patients' chest and abdomen after resolution of diarrhea, which was not really easily expected. It has been shown on this graph in slide 20, Clostridium difficile skin contamination in patients with CD80. that you have even 6 and 8 days after resolution of diarrhea, still a proportion of more than 50% of patients with skin contamination with Clostridium difficile. So Clostridium difficile is spread to the patient's environment, definitely. Wilcox and colleagues from the UK have studied the effect of detergent versus hypochlorite cleaning on environmental contamination and incidence of Clostridium difficile infection. They did a crossover study on two elderly medicine wards to determine whether the cleaning with the hypochlorite disinfectant was better than using a neutral detergent. There was a significant decrease of CDI incidence on ward X from 8.9 to 5.3 cases per 100 admissions, which was statistically significant, using hypochlorite. The incidence of CDI was significantly associated with a proportion of culture-positive environmental sites in this study. So, the use of hypochlorite for environmental cleaning may significantly reduce incidence of CDI. However, as the authors point out, there is definitely a potential for confounding factors, and this has been a crossover study. However, we have some hints, at least, that the use of a disinfectant, which is active against Clostridium difficile, may help to control the spread. Coming to slide 22. A study dealing with multiple reservoirs, or the reservoirs which contribute to the intraoperative bacterial transmission, was published this year by Loftus and colleagues. Slide 23. They did a multi-center study, and they assessed the stopcock transmission events in 204 operating rooms, and they investigated the first and the second cases of the day in each OR in series to identify within and between case transmission. So stopcock contamination was detected in 23%, 126 out of 448 cases, which is really a high figure, which was not really expected as high. And the environment was even a more likely source of stopcock contamination than the provider's hands. The relative risk was 1.91. The confidence interval was above 1, so statistically significant. Or patient's hands, relative risk 2.56, and again, statistically significant. However, it has to be noted that the healthcare workers frequently wear gloves when dealing with stopcocks, so it is not really clear whether this may have had an influence on these findings. Interestingly, and as to be expected, stopcock contamination was associated with an increased mortality in this patient group, and this was quite a high odds ratio, and this was statistically significant. Coming to slide 24. In Germany, there were intense and long discussions about which way to go with surface disinfection and cleaning. And finally, in 2004, the German guideline was published from the Robert Koch Institute, the German Central Institution of Infection Control and Prevention, and it was called the hygiene aspects of hygiene when coming to cleaning and disinfection of surfaces in healthcare settings. Coming to slide 25, and I will translate you this slide because this is in German. This is an original table from this publication from the Robert Koch Institute, and it is divided into areas without any risk of infection, the first column, areas with a potential risk of infection, the second column, areas with a high risk of infection, third column, and special areas in hospitals where there is some risk and what to do with these surfaces. So we see all surfaces may be cleaned or should be cleaned, definitely in areas without any infectious risk. In the second column, if there is a potential risk, frequently touched surfaces should be disinfected. But other surfaces like the floors, for instance, and walls and so on, they may be properly cleaned only without the addition of a disinfectant agent. In areas with a high risk of infection, again, frequently touched surfaces should definitely be disinfected. And for other surfaces, it is a more or less open point, but there is some hint that disinfection will gain a higher level of safety to reduce transmission as respect or as compared to cleaning only. Slide 26. Are there arguments against surface disinfection? So we have to divide arguments against contra-immediate removal of spillage like blood, like urine, with disinfectant and combined here with a detergent, for instance. There are not at all no arguments against. We really have to disinfect any spillage of blood, of urine, of other potentially infectious substances immediately. But in routine, in clinical routine, do we really need routine surface disinfection? There are some arguments against. Why? Rutala and colleagues published in 2001 findings, or summed up the findings, that there is no difference in hospital-acquired infection rates when floors are cleaned with a detergent versus a disinfectant. There have been some studies since the 2001, but this point still is open, and we would need even bigger studies to find out whether we really have an additional effect of disinfectants used on floors, not frequently touched surfaces, but floors, hospital floors, and this is still a point of discussion. And which is very important, 1 to 2 hours after floor disinfection, you almost find identical numbers of bacteria as prior to the disinfection. This was published long time ago by Aleph and colleagues in the British Medical Journal, 1966, and this is a very important fact to keep in mind. If you use surface disinfectant, you may find a few hours later more or less similar levels of bacteria like before the disinfection process, and this may be a different composition of bacteria. You may find other bacteria depending on the use of the surface, but you do not have a long-lasting effect of the surface disinfection itself. Slide 27. So, again, surface disinfection, yes and no. How to apply a surface disinfectant properly? And we see on the left-hand side, it's on slide 27, the way we do it in Freiburg University Hospital. You should apply the substance on the surface. You take any type of cloth or a paper towel, and you spread and you wipe the surface you would like to disinfect. What you really should not use, this is shown on the right-hand side of the slide, spray bottles which are filled with disinfectants, like shown here, and labeled not really professionally. This is really strictly forbidden, and you shouldn't spray disinfectants. You should just apply them on the surface and then wipe. Coming to slide 28. This is an interesting point of discussion. Disinfectants may be harmful to the environment. There is a mode of action, killing bacteria, but this mode of action may also pose some harm to the environment, because these substances may reach the sewage system, for instance, and may there have some mode of action, even if they are in very, very low concentrations in the sewage system. So, disinfectants may harm by causing resistant bacteria, which is especially true for quaternary ammonium compounds, which are widely used also in the U.S., and they may affect sewage treatment performance. The substances may form organic halogen compounds, AOX, which is especially the case for sodium hypochlorite. And interestingly, in Germany, sodium hypochlorite today is rarely used, whether or as compared to, for instance, France, UK, and the US, sodium hypochlorite is still in use frequently. And disinfectants may contaminate surface water. So we have some environmental concerns when we use surface disinfectants in a broad range. Russell has published and discussed this aspect, and especially the aspect of bacterial adaption and resistance to antiseptics, disinfectants, and preservatives, published in 2004 in the Journal of Hospital Infection. And he summed up that there are concerns about the usage of quaternary ammonium compounds, chlorhexidine, and triclosan, and possible bacterial resistance to them and to antibiotics. Even there may be a link between the bacterial resistance or adaption against the compounds and linked to resistance to antibiotics. It is thus essential that disinfectants should be employed only when necessary and then only with a full appreciation of the factors influencing their activity and of the mechanisms involved in bacterial insusceptibility. So disinfectants should be used properly and keeping in mind potential risks. Coming to slide 30 now. Carson and Ellison Aiello have pointed out that antibacterial consumer products may really pose a risk, and these products often contain quaternary ammonium compounds, and there may be a link to drug resistance. So the exposure of bacteria to antibacterial containing products, especially QACs, squats, may exert a selective pressure, resulting in the co-selection of genes encoding reduced susceptibility for both the biocides and the antibiotics. And this is a very relevant point, and we have really to keep in mind that there may be a linkage between the insusceptibility against preservatives, disinfectants, and against antibiotics. And so this is a point which definitely has to be investigated further. Slide 31. So surface disinfection efficacy and safety issues were discussed with colleagues and published. We published this in Current Opinion Infectious Diseases in 2005 and in Journal of Hospital Infection in 2007. Peroxygen compounds, they really show good sporicidal properties, and they will probably replace more problematic substances like chlorine releasing agents. And this is, I think, definitely true for Germany. We really need now use sporicidal peroxygen compounds, and they more or less have replaced the chlorine releasing agents in Germany, and I think also in other countries, and also in Canada, to my knowledge. Scientific data report the need for proper use of disinfectants, definitely, as I have discussed already. For instance, the avoidance of widespread application, especially in low concentrations, and definitely in consumer products. There is a need for well-designed studies addressing the role of disinfection and infection control. We still need to know in more depth how the disinfectants and compared to disinfectants, cleaning agents, detergents, how their mode of action really is, and how the long-lasting effects of these different ways of action, disinfection, cleaning is. Slide 32. Stephanie Dancer, she is really maybe the most known expert in the world dealing with cleaning in hospitals, and her work is really very close to the practical aspects of cleaning in today's hospitals. And she summed up in a very very important publication published in the European Journal of Clinical Microbiology and Infectious Diseases last year. Cleaning practices should be really tailored to the clinical risk. There are really very different surfaces. There's a wide range of surfaces, different surfaces, as I've shown on the picture a few slides before. And there's different equipment, and there's also different building design. There is some confusion between nursing and domestic personnel over the allocation of cleaning responsibilities, and this is a really practical aspect which has to be deal with. We really need to define who is responsible for cleaning and or disinfecting surfaces in the patient area. Is this a task for the domestic staff, or isn't it a task for nurses if you come to equipment, for instance, infusion pumps and monitor surfaces? The fear of infection encourages the use of powerful disinfectants for the elimination of real or imagined pathogens in hospitals. So we really should know what is the needed mode of action. Do we need disinfection, or is the cleaning for itself a proper way to go? Slide 33. Not only do these agents offer a false assurance against contamination, their disinfection potential cannot be achieved without the prior removal of organic soil, and which means we definitely need the cleaning process for its own. So the mechanical removal of debris, of any dust, dirt, is a very, very and the most important first step in any decontamination process. And then we may, in addition, need the disinfection as a further step. Hospital cleaning deserves further investigation for routine and outbreak practices. This was the conclusion given here by Stephanie Dancer, and I think this is definitely true. We need more insights into this quite complicated combination of mechanical and chemical modes of action. Slide 34. To sum up, from my point of view, proper cleaning procedures and targeted surface disinfection, cleaning and disinfection are really established components of hospital infection control. And special situations really require special actions. For instance, if we treat severely immunocompromised patients, if we have to deal with multi-resistant pathogens, with outbreaks and special situations. However, we really should not use surface disinfectants for convenience purposes. And routine disinfection of frequently touched surfaces really is indicated in special settings. This is, for instance, done in the intensive care unit. Frequently touched surfaces there are disinfected, for instance, 3 times a day to lower the level of contamination around the patient where we have to touch surfaces frequently as the healthcare workers. But, and this should be really kept in mind, the compliance with hand hygiene is really of greater importance. If we have a high level of surface disinfection, surface decontamination, but a low level of compliance with hand hygiene, this won't work. The other way around, if you have a high level of hand hygiene and a lower level of decontamination of environmental surfaces, this may work. However, the combination is what we really need. We need proper cleaning and disinfection of surfaces, and we definitely need a very high compliance with hand hygiene, and then we really can lower the risk of transmission of problematic pathogens, including multi-drug-resistant organisms like MRSA and VRE. So this is the last slide, and I would like to thank you for your audience. Thank you very much.
Marcus, thank you very much. I've enjoyed that very much. It's very interesting how that we went through phases, didn't we? At least here in North America, there was a phase where disinfection in a healthcare environment was seen to be sort of passé and old-fashioned, and that cleaning was the most important thing.
That's right. Yeah.
And then we've evolved back into now heavy disinfection.
Yeah. It's like a pendulum going back and forth, and it's like in real life, you see this all around. Yes, if you sometimes there is really a kind of an overuse, and then you have a period of underscoring and again overuse. So it's hard to find the exact point.
It reminds me a little bit of the cruise ships that I was on. After the norovirus outbreaks of a few years ago, where they made the big media.
I imagine. Yeah,
every surface on that cruise ship was cleaned every 20 minutes. Can you imagine cleaning every single surface on the ship every 20 minutes?
Yeah.
And,
oh, my God.
That our hospitals could be that clean. On slide 30, let me just back up to that. You indicate it's a study by Allison Aiello, Elaine Larson, and Stuart Levy.
Yes,
consumer products. And there really is a shockingly high use of antibacterials. And I'm thinking particularly on quaternary ammonium chloride and triclosan in consumer products. And these are in spray bottles. These are really in almost anything. Is there any control, at least in Europe, on the production of these potentially hazardous products? Or labeling even?
There are some. Yes, there have been concerns, and experts have been involved. And now official institutions in Germany, and I think in Europe, are more strict with respect to, for instance, quaternary ammonium compounds, which have to be put in consumer products. And I think from the producer's point of view, you really have to give these institutions data to show that there is that the risk of using these disinfectants in the products will outweigh or the benefit will outweigh the risk. And I think this is hard to do. So we see quite a restriction in Germany and in other European countries for these. I think these products are more in use in the U.S. really.
Oh, they're certainly here in Canada anyway. They're certainly widely used. I'm sure that others will have questions for you. If they do, I would encourage people to send their question to me, paul@webertraining.com, and if it's okay, I will forward those on to you.
Okay.
If that's all right. Now, I see that in my second to last slide, I have made a mistake. And there are, in fact, two teleclasses still pending, so I'll just mention that.
Okay.
That next week there is a British teleclass on contamination of the ward environment, the importance of hand hygiene when leaving the patient zone. And it'll be broadcast live to the UK. And for those of you who are in North America and don't want to listen to that early in the morning, you can access it, access the recording later in the day. And the very last slide shows is a promotion for teleclass education next year. The schedule, or most of the schedule, is already posted online. Just go to the teleclass schedule link for on the website, and you can see almost everything that we have for 2013 up there. There will be others added through the year, as there always are, live broadcasts from conferences and that sort of thing. And I would like to again thank Diversey for their sponsorship of the broadcast of this teleclass lecture and for their support in teleclass education all the way along. And of course, Marcus, thank you to you. This was really a tremendous talk. I'm glad we had the chance to do this. I've been trying to get you involved in teleclass education for some time, so I'm so pleased that you were able to make this time, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again before too long.
Thank you very much.
All right. So thank you to everyone who's listening, and we'll talk again soon.